This episode is sponsored by Lifeway Kefir, those yummy little cultured dairy drinks that you've probably seen in your local grocery store. Each 8-ounce bottle of kefir contains 11 grams of all-natural protein, 12 different probiotics, and 30% of your daily calcium requirement. Not only that, but it's 99% lactose-free, and they are delicious. If you don't believe me, check out the comments about them in my Facebook discussion group, so you don't even have to take it from me. And guess what? I have an exclusive offer just for Court Junkie listeners. If you go to lifewaykefir.com/courtjunkie, you can get a $1 off coupon. That's lifewaykefir.com/courtjunkie. Hi, Court Junkies. This is Jillian, and I am really excited for today's brief. But first, I want to say that I hope you all had a great holiday. Thank you all so much for listening to this podcast, for subscribing, leaving me reviews, contacting me. It really means a lot, and I definitely could not do this without you. Now imagine meeting 1,000 plus people who are interested in these court cases, just like you are. And if that sounds good to you, then please consider joining my Court Junkie discussion group on Facebook, where we talk about the interesting court cases we come across, other true crime podcasts, and more fun stuff. Everyone is welcome to join, and I made it really easy to find. Just go to courtjunkie.com/Facebook. Now, on to the episode. Shaken baby syndrome. Chances are, you already know what this is. At the very least, you've likely heard of it before. But for those of you who don't know what it is, according to the Mayo Clinic, shaken baby syndrome is a serious brain injury resulting from forcefully shaking an infant or toddler. It goes on to state that shaken baby syndrome destroys a child's brain cells and prevents his or her brain from getting enough oxygen. It then says that it's a form of child abuse that can result in permanent brain damage or even death. Pretty awful. Given how much publicity shaken baby syndrome has gotten over the years, it's probably been drilled into your brain that you should never shake a baby. And that advice is definitely a good thing. But what you may not know is how controversial shaken baby syndrome is becoming. You may not know that some renowned doctors don't think that it's an accurate finding. You may not know that hundreds of people in the United States alone are being accused of it. And you may not know that there's a good chance that those people who are being accused of the worst crimes imaginable might be completely innocent. For today's brief, I spoke with Susan Goldsmith, the writer and director of a documentary on this very topic called The Syndrome. Susan is an investigative reporter from Portland, Oregon, and she's been covering child abuse cases since the 1990s. She's even won a Casey Medal, which is a national award given to a handful of reporters each year for reporting about disadvantaged and abused children. And one of her investigations prompted the Oregon State Legislature to pass two laws to better protect children in the foster care system. How did you get the idea for this film? Like, how did this all start? What fascinated you about shaken baby syndrome?
I got a call. I was a reporter at the Oregonian here in Portland, where I'm based. I was on their investigative team, and I got a call from a source who I admired and respected a lot, who said, you know, I think you should look into this. There's a lot of talk in the circles I'm in that there's a lot of problems with this thing. Check it out. So the first call I made was to a lawyer in Portland who was fantastic. And she had me over and she explained to me, here are some of the problems. And she said, I'm defending a couple right now in family court. And next week, Dr. John Plunkett is coming and testifying. Why don't you come watch him?
Dr. John Plunkett is a forensic pathologist from Minnesota who's a leading critic of shaken baby syndrome. Susan became so intrigued by Dr. Plunkett's testimony that she decided to do more research on the topic herself, and what she found made her decide to make a documentary about it. But when she pitched it to her employer, the Oregonian, they turned her down. So she and her cousin, a documentary filmmaker, raised money and decided to put it out themselves. They did everything for the film, from the research to the music, and then, of course, nailing down their sources. And Dr. Plunkett was one of them. But they needed to start from the beginning. Where did this syndrome come from? How did it start? This might sound a little weird, but the origin of shaken baby syndrome can be traced back to the 1960s, to monkeys. A neurosurgeon named Dr. Amaya conducted a whiplash study using monkeys. The study was supported by the United States Navy, and due to the whiplash, the monkeys suffered cerebral concussions and brain injuries. Following his study, medical experts started drawing conclusions about humans based on the monkeys' injuries, and this became the basis for shaken baby syndrome. And as a result of that study, there are three things that doctors are trained to look for with shaken baby syndrome: subdural hematoma, which is blood on the protective layer of the brain; cerebral edema, which is brain swelling; and retinal hemorrhage, or bleeding in the back of the eye. The theory is that nothing else aside from violent shaking could cause these symptoms. There are three symptoms of the shaken baby syndrome, right? Or like three things that doctors are trained to look for. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting in the film that I did not know is that doctors are legally required to report suspected abuse when they see any of those three symptoms, and that there are actually even consequences if they don't. So can you talk a little bit about that?
If you report, you're free of all liability. If you don't report and it turns out to later be abuse, you can be sued. And in some cases, I don't know, I don't think there are criminal penalties. What doctors do is they just report, because that's what we would do if we were doctors too. How would we know? A kid comes in with a broken arm, we'd be like, well, let's just report it and let them sort it out.
When a doctor reports these symptoms, usually a parent or caretaker, whoever the last person with the baby was, is then questioned. And hundreds of people are prosecuted every year. The first major televised shaken baby syndrome case was the Louise Woodward case, which was aired on Court TV after the O.J. Simpson trial.
She was a nanny, a British au pair who was a nanny in the United States. Case, she was accused of shaking and killing, bashing the head of and shaking the child of these two doctors. I think he was about 16 months at the time. So he's maybe it was eight months at the time, Maddie Ethan. And he dies. They charge her with killing this child. It goes on Court TV and Barry Schack defends her, and he brings in Dr. Amaya, the one whose all research it was based on. And you see clips of him testifying in the trial in our film. And Dr. Yusinski, who's in our film, who is a protege of Dr. Amaya, testified. She had a fabulous defense team, but this thing was just went crazy, and people were protesting all over in England and protesting here. And, you know, she's a killer, she's innocent. The jury found her guilty, and the judge ended up overturning, because he was a smart guy who figured out that hysteria should not rule the day with this poor young woman. Science. And let her go. That was Louise Woodward. And because of that case, that the syndrome just took hold of American consciousness.
A few years later, the National Center on Shaken Baby Syndrome was formed. It's a nonprofit public charity that works nationally and internationally with hospitals, healthcare workers, home visitors, and others to provide education and resources that they say will ultimately keep babies safe. Their website says that each year, the National Center's resources and services reaches over 1 million people worldwide. But a growing number of doctors and scientists now seem to be questioning the validity of shaken baby syndrome. In Susan's film, Dr. Plunkett argues that the three symptoms that are solely attributed to the syndrome can actually be symptoms of a number of other things, such as a child falling off of a bicycle, or even a number of other illnesses. Another thing Dr. Plunkett argues is that if a baby had truly been shaken, there would be neck damage, something he said that he has never seen before in a shaken baby case.
What he said is the forces from shaking would have to travel through the neck, right? Just logically, if you think about it, you're saying the shaking, you're shaking, and that the violence of that movement is going through the neck into the brain and causing problems. As Dr. Yusinski, you know, points out, like, how do we hold babies' heads? And so what Amaya's research found and subsequent research is that a kid's neck would be broken long before you would get hemorrhaging and, you know, the bleeding and the bruising and the swelling in the brain and the back of the eye. And there's never been neck damage, severe neck damage, in a shaken baby case in the United States, as far as I know. And I've been researching it since 08.
Before we continue with this brief, I want to take a quick break to thank the sponsor of this episode, Lifeway Kefir. As I said in the intro, Lifeway Kefir is responsible for those yummy, cultured dairy drinks that you've probably seen in the dairy aisle at your local grocery store. Well, I'm here to tell you that they are not only nutritious, but they're absolutely delicious as well. With flavors such as blueberry, strawberry, and vanilla Madagascar, it's like a treat for your tongue, in addition to being good for you. So if you're looking for a healthy snack, consider Lifeway Kefir. And they were nice enough to hook us all up with a deal. If you go to lifewaykefir.com/courtjunkie, you can get $1 off of your next purchase. That's Lifeway, KEFIR.com/courtjunkie. And now, back to the brief. More and more, the subject of shaken baby syndrome is becoming controversial. And the main concern with the skeptics, so to speak, is that hundreds of people are being prosecuted every year in the United States due to shaken baby syndrome. And if there are serious questions about the syndrome itself, what does that mean for people who have been charged, and many even convicted, of harming these babies? Susan's film touches on a number of these cases. One of them, a couple from Tucson, Arizona, is particularly interesting. Joshua Kofer and his wife Samantha took their 3-week-old baby daughter to the hospital. She had a fever and was vomiting. Doctors examined the baby and said that she had signs of internal trauma and said that somebody had abused her. Naturally, police were called and Josh and Samantha were interrogated. In Josh's interrogation, he was told that these are all classic signs of the baby being shaken and someone shook that baby within the last week. Josh was adamant that he had never shaken their baby and that Samantha would never do that either. But the officer kept insisting, somebody did something to her, and it's either you or Samantha. Samantha's interrogation was the same. The investigators kept trying to get one of them to say that the other one could have done it. But both Josh and Samantha kept saying that they would never shake the baby themselves and that neither would the other one. Samantha was in tears throughout the interrogation and she kept asking how her baby was doing. The couple was interrogated separately for 12 hours. Josh and Samantha were charged, and while they fought those charges in court, their new baby, along with their 7-year-old son, were taken away from them and placed into foster care. They faced up to 60 years in prison if found guilty. But both were acquitted when evidence in court showed that the baby's symptoms were likely due to another medical condition and not abuse. They eventually got their kids back. The first landmark case, however, was the case of Audrey Edmonds. Audrey was a stay-at-home mom from Wanakee, Wisconsin. On October 16, 1995, she was babysitting her neighbor's 7-month-old daughter, Natalie. She said she gave Natalie a bottle and put her down in a bedroom. And when she returned about a half hour later, Natalie was choking and unresponsive. In a panic, Audrey ran to a neighbor's house and called 911. The police and paramedics arrived, but it was too late. Natalie had stopped breathing. An autopsy showed that Natalie had extensive brain damage, and the cause of death was determined to be shaken baby syndrome. Audrey was arrested and charged with first-degree reckless homicide, even though she swore that she had done nothing wrong. At Audrey's trial, the prosecution presented several medical experts who all said that Natalie's death was a hallmark case for shaken baby syndrome. They said Natalie had clearly been shaken to death, which meant that Audrey must have been the one who was responsible. Audrey's defense presented Natalie's medical records, which showed that days before her death, Natalie's parents had taken her to the doctor for lethargy, irritability, and vomiting, all symptoms that could indicate brain injury. But the jury found Audrey guilty, and she was sentenced to 18 years in prison. In 2001, Audrey was denied parole because the parole board found that she was unrepentant. 2 years later, the Wisconsin Innocence Project got involved. And by that time, the shaken baby syndrome skeptics had already emerged with their findings. And the forensic pathologist who had conducted Natalie's autopsy, Dr. Robert Huntington, also no longer believed that Natalie had died of shaken baby syndrome. At an evidentiary hearing in 2007, Dr. Huntington, along with five other doctors, testified on Audrey's behalf. And in January 2008, the Wisconsin 4th District Court of Appeals overturned her conviction, citing significant controversy in the medical field about shaken baby syndrome. And that's not the only shaken baby case that has resulted in an overturned conviction. Drayton Witt was a father from Arizona who spent a full decade in prison after being accused of shaking his young baby son Stephen, leading to the child's death. Drayton was exonerated in 2012 after the medical examiner in his case recanted his testimony. It appeared that the baby, who had actually suffered from seizures throughout his life, died from an ongoing medical problem that had led to a stroke, not from being shaken by his father. The medical examiner told the court, "There is now no longer consensus in the medical community that the findings I reported in my autopsy report are reliable proof of shaken baby syndrome or child abuse." He went on to say, "If I were to testify today, I would state that I believe Stephen's death was likely the cause of a natural disease process, not shaken baby syndrome." And yet another case is Jennifer Delpreet, a former daycare worker from Will County, Illinois. Jennifer had been convicted of first-degree murder for the 2000 death of an infant who was under her care at the time. After spending nearly a decade in prison, in 2014, U.S. District Judge Matthew Kennelly ordered her release. In a 97-page opinion, Judge Kennelly held that Jennifer had established her actual innocence in the case. After considering all of the evidence, including a battle of the experts from both sides, Judge Kennelly wrote that there was abundant doubt, not merely reasonable doubt, regarding her guilt. He wrote that the shaken baby syndrome diagnosis had become highly suspect, saying that, given what we know now, that diagnosis is arguably more an article of faith than a proposition of science. The truth is, there are so many of these types of cases. A child in someone's care is either injured or suffers from some sort of seemingly sudden illness. Said child goes to the hospital, and the rest is history. It is beyond terrifying to think that if your child fell off their bicycle and hit their head or suffered from an unforeseen illness and you took them to the hospital, that you might be questioned and even charged with harming your child. Perhaps even scarier is that the exact number of cases involving shaken baby syndrome in the United States is nearly impossible to tally, because shaken baby syndrome isn't what these people are being charged with. They could be facing homicide, manslaughter, child abuse, neglect. So to go through all of those types of cases to try and find a shaken baby accusation would be a daunting task at best. But according to a 2009 study conducted by the Innocence Project, based on post-conviction appeals, more than 1,000 people may be incarcerated due to shaken baby syndrome. Shaken baby syndrome advocates are well aware of the growing skepticism. As a result of some doctors, such as Dr. Plunkett, claiming that instead of shaking, some of the reported injuries must have come from an impact, shaken baby actually went through a name change.
It started shaken baby syndrome, and then one of the doctors in our film did a study about playground accidents because he started to believe, this pathologist, Dr. Plunkett, that some of these cases where they were saying it was shaken, the kid had fallen or the kid had accidentally bashed his head. And the shaken baby syndrome promoters, no, that can happen. Kids can't get hurt and fall. So John Plunkett went and gathered all this information from the Consumer Product Safety Commission about playground accidents and found that kids actually can die from falls, which, of course, makes sense. Why do we put them in helmets, right?
Right.
Which you can't believe, but the pediatricians were saying can't hurt them. The head banging and no, it's shaken baby syndrome. So Plunkett publishes his study based on this, looking at the Consumer Product Safety Commission information, and the promoters of the syndrome go crazy because he's saying these kids hurt their heads and got in accidents and fell. How does that explain, that didn't happen from shaking? And the promoters of the shaken baby diagnosis decided soon after John Plunkett's study was published to change the name of the entire syndrome to be the shaken baby impact syndrome. They changed the entire name of it to accommodate the fact that these kids actually, some of them were showing up with fractures and head injuries. And John Plunkett and others were like, well, how does shaking explain that? Your theory doesn't fit. And so instead of saying you're right, they said, well, we're just going to change the name so it encompasses what you're talking about. And that worked for a while, but more and more research came out about shaking could really not be the answer for a lot of the issues, symptoms these kids were experiencing because of the neck problem. And the doctors defending these cases were winning more and more because they were bringing the science into court. So the shaken baby syndrome promoters, again, those featured in our film, got back together and said, we got to change the name again. Things aren't going well. We got to get rid of shaking. Call it abuse of head trauma.
I found that in 2009, the American Academy of Pediatrics posted a statement on their website saying in part, they recommend pediatricians embrace the term abusive head trauma to describe an inflicted injury to the head and its contents. So, if the shaken baby syndrome really isn't as scientifically sound as originally thought, then how did it get to be a standard in the medical community? Susan has a theory. So we talked a little bit earlier about the ritual abuse syndrome epidemic, or like the satanic panic from the 80s and 90s. So can you talk a little bit about how that might relate to the shaken baby syndrome that's going on?
Sure. Well, people don't remember this. This happened a lot of years ago in the 1980s when the funding first started flowing to fight child abuse from the federal government. Before that, it was up to the states. It wasn't really recognized as a problem. As soon as that really big money started flowing from the federal government to the child abuse centers, they started finding crazy amounts of abuse. And what they said was abuse. And what they found all over the country was they said there were satanic cults operating in daycares throughout America. And we had a wave of prosecutions starting with this famous one, and I encourage everyone to go on YouTube and watch about it and learn about it, because you can't believe it went on. But the McMartin Daycare, and they said there were organized bands of Satanists operating in daycare centers, you know, raping children, sacrificing children, harming animals, crazy stuff. These cases got into court all over America, and people were prosecuted. And how it relates to Shaken Baby is, in those cases, doctors went into court and said, this child is a victim of abuse. And they said, her hymen, or that little boy's anus, showed evidence of abuse. There were physical signs of abuse, or what they said. And that's why, in part, a lot of these people got convicted. Well, that all got exposed. They just took regular pathology, the regular ways that people's genitals appear, and they found anomalies, and they said that was abuse.
Another thing Susan covers in her film is the fact that there seems to be a major discrepancy between the amount of time you face if you go to trial and you're found guilty for this versus the amount of time you're offered through a plea deal. Essentially, you could be facing 60 plus years in prison if you go to trial and you're found guilty, but oftentimes in these cases, a plea deal is offered. And some of the deals offer you time served if you just admit to shaking the baby, meaning you could serve zero jail time or take your chances at trial. This leaves many people to wonder, wouldn't taking the deal be a better option even if you were innocent? But Susan says the guilty pleas only make shaken baby syndrome appear more credible, since people will often take the plea and admit their guilt. Basically, admitting that shaken baby syndrome is real. I've thought long and hard about what I would do in this situation. I want to say that I'd be strong enough to take it to trial, and that I'd have enough faith in our justice system to know that I would be acquitted. But the stakes are beyond high, and that could mean that I would be paying with my life. This is a pretty controversial topic, and before I watched Susan's film, I actually had no idea just how controversial it is. But I'm not done with it. I'll be releasing an episode shortly that will follow a specific shaken baby syndrome case, and I figured that this brief would serve as a good intro to that. And now I'm interested to hear what you all think. Has shaken baby syndrome lost its credibility? If you were being accused of harming or potentially even causing the death of a child, would you insist on fighting it in court, even if you could walk free if you just said that you did it? Let me know in our Facebook group. But regardless of what your opinion is, I think that this is a really important topic to discuss. Because if what Susan's film and what the shaken baby syndrome skeptics are alleging is true, then there just may be a lot more exonerations coming soon. You can find Susan's film, The Syndrome, on YouTube and on some on-demand channels. I'll include a link in the show notes. Also, as I was recording this episode, I saw that the Life of the Law podcast is doing a special 5-part series on the shaken baby syndrome. So if you're interested in the topic, you might want to check out that podcast as well. A special thank you to Susan Goldsmith for talking with me today, and a special thank you to all of you for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe and leave me a review. And please join our Facebook discussion group, which you can find at courtjunkie.com/Facebook. Thanks, and until next time.